Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
With ShiftWork, a podcast made in collaboration with RWCF and HRN, we're shifting the conversation about how the restaurant food you love makes its way to the table. Listen to and follow ShiftWork on your favorite podcast app.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deal in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Makiko Harada, who is a salt specialist and the owner of Glam Salt, a salt shop based in Hudson Valley, New York. She opened Glam Salt in 2012 and now has numerous famous chef clients who adore her products, including those at Sushi Nakazawa, Sushi Yasuda, and Hatsuhana. Makiko is known for extremely high-quality, unique products, and the awe and respect for salt in Japanese culture underlie her business approach. So today we'll discuss how Makiko got into salt, the importance of salt in Japanese culture, why salt can taste so diversely differently depending on origin, and how her top chef clients choose a specific type of salt, and much, much more. But before we start, Japanese is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. And please write to Abby. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Makiko Harada. Hello, Makiko. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Ako-san. Thank you very much for inviting me to your show today.
Right. And also, congratulations on the 10th anniversary of Glam Salt.
Thank you very much. It's 10 years.
Right. Amazing. All right. So first of all, to get to know you, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Yes. Yeah, so I was born in Tokyo and I'm turning 48 this year. Time flies. And when I was growing up, my father was working for a Japanese trading company in Tokyo, and he worked overseas a lot. And while he was working there, he oftentimes, we had some samples of foods from different parts of the world, which were still very new to Japan. So I grew up surrounded by eating just all kinds of food that my father got from his company, samples or my mom is also a great cook. So I grew up in an environment where the food was very, very important part of my life.
Right. Sounds like you grew up with good food for thought as well. Like culturally, you are very open already.
Yes. When you're,
right. Okay. And I heard that you grew up in a very unique family. So could you tell us about it?
Yes, in terms of food, especially my mom's side, there are a lot of, we are a very artistic family. And also in addition to that, in terms of food business, we have several chefs in Japan and also owning some food business. And one of them was that my grandfather used to own a small rainbow trout farm in northern part of Japan long time ago. Before the war broke in Japan. And he was selling very high quality rainbow trout to very, very high end restaurants in Tokyo and also Emperor's family back then. So the food and also my dad's side was also my aunts are owning a small cafe where they are living. So food, in terms of food, once again, it was been just naturally has been part of my life, and it's still with me.
Right. That's very impressive. And especially that part, your grandfather supplied trout to the emperor, which is just amazing.
Yes.
Right, that's the best of the best. Okay, so when and why did you come to New York?
So I came to this country about 1989, which is, I think it's been 33 years ago this year. And I went to a boarding school in Massachusetts, and I was a student at the Northfield Mount Hermon for 4 years. And so I spent my very beginning of my time here in Massachusetts, in New England for 4 years, and then went to a college in California, and then came to a graduate school in New York City. And I'm so living in the New York State has been the longest state that I've been living here in this country.
Right. Well, very impressive. You covered the whole continent.
Except the middle part of this country.
Okay. And you're also a New York State licensed and a board certified art therapist, and worked as a therapist for 15 years before you became the Gramsalt owner. So what type of therapy did you offer to whom?
So first of all, I'm still in touch of our therapy business, and I was in a hibernation mode, but I did come back recently in the recent years. So I am still part of the art therapy community, and now I'm on the board for the American Art Therapy Association's New York chapter, and I'm on the executive board, and I'm the first Japanese to be on the board ever, so which is very exciting. And for a therapy, I began my clinical practice at the Housing Works, which have mental health services for people with HIV/AIDS, with a background of mental ill, chemical addicted. So I worked with them for a while. And after that, I became a faculty at the New School for a while. And now I'm offering lectures on social justice issues, which is especially during the pandemic, the sudden rise of attacks against Asians. And I've been giving lectures about what we can do, about what art can offer to mitigate the situation.
Right. Well, it's very impressive. Your energy is very, very impressive. And also your multi-talent. That's amazing. Yeah, and your contribution, you know, the people you offered therapy, I was very impressed. You're such a giver. So, yeah, congratulations on that side too.
Oh, thank you.
So now let's talk about SALT. So how did you get into SALT?
Well, it's actually a mystery, and I think I came into this business almost by an accident. And about 10 years ago, I was going through a divorce, and one day I happened to purchase this lemon flake salt from Cyprus, and when I tasted it, I felt, this is it. And I felt that back then, I felt that I saw myself in that salt. And meaning that, you know, in the past, salt has a very long history to human history, because everywhere you go, salt was a part of the people's tradition and cultures. And, you know, the word salt, the word salari, comes from salt in Latin. And Roman soldiers are paid with salt back then as their salary. So that's why the word salary has a very strong connection with ancient traditions of importance of salt back then. And I guess I saw myself in the salt that, you know, salt used to be spotlighted it more in the past than now. And I felt that my spotlight was gone. And I guess I wanted to put my spotlight back on, and somehow that feeling synchronized me encountering that salt. And so the name Glam Salt means the glam comes from the glamorous. And so this putting the salt back on the glamorous light. And that's the meaning of my business. And yes, so that's how my business began.
Wow. So revelation, something happened.
Yes.
Right, star aligned, stars aligned. So, okay. And then, so according to your interview article in Edible Manhattan, which I found a very great, great article, yes. You see salt as a form of art, a form of creative expression. So what do you mean by that?
Well, salt is, first of all, of course it's edible, but salt can be in can be very artistic because there are some salts that are just visually beautiful. And there are some salts, for example, from pearl salt from Djibouti. It's a small country in East Africa, and their salts are literally pearl-shaped. And so if you look at them in a jar, I mean, they look like a real pearls, and it's just very dreamy and just gives you a lot of imagination, and it's just visually stunning and beautiful. So to me, like salts are like gems. And I kind of see myself as this kind of like a gem trader in Rajasthan, India, where they do a lot of extensive jewelry making. And I'm this gem trader, and the chefs are my artist. And, you know, the chefs buy salts, you know, palettes, the paints called the salts, to just create their own artwork, which are actually the dishes that they create. And so it's salt, and also there are some salts like a Japanese plum salt, and they come in this gorgeous hue of pink, and it's a naturally colored, nothing added, and just flavored with local plum vinegar, and which makes the sea salt just gorgeous pink. And it just, to me, it's just art, just beautiful. It's fashion. It's more than edible element, but it just full of imagination. It's just full of wonder.
Right. Actually, looking at your webpage, that's beautiful. It's not just try to make look different like a gem, but they look really exactly looking like a gem. You don't, yes. You're not told it's salt. It doesn't look like it. So, yes. It's a jewelry shop online, yes. Rather than salt shop. So
yes.
Amazing. Okay. And so salt is culturally and spiritually very important in Japan. So could you tell us how important salt is in Japan?
Yes. So there are many shrines, Shinto shrines throughout Japan. And when you go there, oftentimes like a small bag of salts are being sold at the temples, and to use for purification and for cleansing. So salt has a very like a spiritual meaning to the Japanese. And also here in New York City, when you go to traditional Japanese restaurants, and you oftentimes see this element called morishio, meaning that you see a small mound. It kind of looks like a pyramid. It's a triangle shaped salt on a small plate outside of the restaurants, and it's our tradition to just put that salt outside of the restaurant to invite customers and word of spirits. So for the Japanese, it's not only an edible entity, but it also has like spiritual component to it.
Right. And also traditionally in Japan, if you go to funeral, you're given a pack of salt. Just yes. Sprinkle yourself with it before you enter your house.
Yes.
And it's called the kiyomisho. So,
yes. Yeah. It's also, sorry. So to add that, the sumo wrestlers, they also spring some salt to purify the mount that they're on.
Right. Yeah, people think it's rice because it's Japanese sports, but that's not the rice, that's salt, right?
Yes.
That's more, so that's sprinkled yes. all over yes. their grounds. So anyway, so we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss how top chefs sell their own salt. So please stay with us.
Hi, I'm Kiki Luya, the Executive Director of Restaurant Workers Community Foundation. And I'm the host of a new podcast called Shift Work. In the last 6 months, some 6,500 restaurants have closed their doors, and there's never been a time when restaurants and their 12 million workers have been more vulnerable. It's time to transform hospitality. With Shift Work, a podcast made in collaboration with RWCF and HRN, We're shifting the conversation about how the restaurant food you love makes its way to the table. What does it really take to make that experience happen? And who are the countless workers responsible? We're talking porters, cleaning crew, prep cooks, servers, baristas, hosts, bartenders, barbacks, managers, sommeliers, and chefs. I'll also introduce you to organizations that are leading industry transformation. We'll discuss mental health, fair pay, racial justice, and how hospitality can change for the better. We need it. Listen to and follow Shift Work on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Katema, and my guest today is Makiko Harada, who is a salt specialist and the owner of Gram Salt, a salt shop based in Hudson Valley, New York. So what is the concept of Gram Salt, and why did you open it?
So the basic concept of Gram Salt is that I want to bring back this tradition of more active usage of different kinds of salt into our lives. And that's why I named my business Glam Salt. And the glam refers to glamorous. So I wanted to make the salts in a spotlight again and to make them really glamorous and that to let the world know that, you know, salts really need it, like just like in the past.
Right. Yeah, so it's not just selling salt, but it's so much packed in your business. So we'll unfold it from the next few minutes. But so before we get into your products, let's talk about the basics of salt. So I hear different names of salt, such as rock salt, sea salt, and table salt. And what are the major categories of those salt?
So basically, to me, there are three types of salt, which is the rock salt, and which is the most common salt around. And second one is a sea salt. And the third one is a lake salt. And lake salt is more, it's less common, but it's well the categories. And to me, I have another category of salt, which is the easy way to put it is a good salt and not so good salt. And when I mean the good salt, I refer to the salt that made with care. And the other salt is salt that are really industrial made and super processed in the factory, and all the mineral components are stripped out. And that's why that particular, the salts that are made, that are industrially made, is really salty. And so for me, I carry salts that are made with care. And when I taste them, I can taste that these salts are made with care by the makers.
Right. And so basically, so salt is made mainly out of sodium chloride, but also includes minerals such as calcium, potassium, and magnesium. So how the different levels of these minerals affect the taste, flavor, and texture of salt?
Well, first of all, the most important thing that really affects our well-being, the better salt you use is better for the salt, I mean, for our health. And so the balanced salt is the one that you can taste the saltiness, a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of sourness and a little of sourness in general. But it's very hard to find the really a balanced, minerally balanced salt. And when you use a really great balanced salt, it's like magic. And when you use that type of salt on your dish, it just really transforms how the entire dish would taste like.
Right. And we are taught when we grew up, we are always taught that salt is salty, but I really sometimes sense sweetness or bitterness or some umami in salt. So there's so many. And I think it's just hard to say like more calcium tastes like this or that. It's really the terroir, right? From the places from.
Yes.
And speaking of location, you sell salt from different parts of the world, including in Japan, Utah, in the US, India, Iran, Mongolia, Bolivia, you name it. And how different are they? And why did you choose salt from these different regions?
Well, to me, I try to pick diverse salt as possible from different parts of the world to share the beauty and diversity of the salts. And but the most important things for me that the salt tastes great, and that's my criteria to choose salts. And also, I also tend to look for a different texture or a usual visually different salts. And for example, the latest salt I have is Egyptian desert salt, and they look like glass fiber visually, and chefs just like that texture. And also tastes, it tastes very takes very plain and very it's very has a very subtle flavor to it.
Right. Okay. And then how many types of salt do you carry, and what types?
I think I carry about 20 salts or so, and I carry the plain sea salt as well as flavored salt, such as the green tea flavor, black truffle, just the salt that the flavored was just different kinds of tastes.
Right, and I see you have Japanese flavors like ume and plum, and yuzu, yeah. Matcha, seaweed, and wasabi, so they look really good. These are made just basically high quality yuzu peel, for example, or matcha. They blend it with finely ground salt. Is that how it's made?
Yes, and most of my products are not additives free, and many of the salts in the market, they're added at they have some sort of preservative. So there, for example, with a plum sea salt, sometimes some of the plum salt do taste like chemical, and so because they're colored with artificial pink color, and so I don't carry salts that really super artificially added, because first of all it just doesn't taste good, and the end note just leaves you with just a chemically taste, and I don't carry them.
Right. Okay, so, and well, the salt is a preservative by itself, so you don't have to worry about shelf life, right, when you buy those?
Well, however, there are some sea salts in the market that they add some anti-flaking agents to last longer, and also that they don't, the salt, they don't get stuck together, but I don't carry salts that comes with these things either.
Right, so you just shake it, and then they
yes.
break down again.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Okay. And so you sell salt from different parts of the world. So are they very different? So depending on like a Utah salt from Iran, or, you know, like you said, the Cyprus lemon flavor Cyprus salt that you got fascinated by.
So, yes, in general, the rock salts tend to be, first of all, the sea salts tend to be more, in terms of flavor, tastes like more multidimensional, like as you taste the bitterness, sourness, sweetness, and saltiness. But rock salts tend to be like a more like a concentrated on like a distinctive taste, such as like a little sour and little salty and little sweet. But that doesn't mean that sea salt is better than rock salt. It's just a different kinds of, it's like a different colors. It's like, so we are talking about the differences, the color palette differences between the paint of red versus paint of indigo blue. So that's the difference.
Well, I'm just curious that, you know, the blue color comes from certain minerals.
Yes, yeah, so there's this Persian salt, and because of the magic of nature, it's kind of has this purple blue color to it, and it just the mineral that has this purplish bluish color.
Right. So it's not one of those calcium, potassium, magnesium, but something different, more like
yes.
a micro. Minerals.
Yes.
Interesting. Right. Okay. And by the way, I really think you know, people tend to dislike bitterness, but when you have the right bitterness in salt, that's a flavor enhancer. I personally got fascinated by some bitterness in salt. So, and you said it's mostly from the sea salt?
I think it really depends. And I think the more different kinds of minerals you taste, it's better for your health because you're getting more minerals from the salt.
Right. Okay. And I mentioned briefly in the introduction that your clients include many prominent famous chefs. So who are your clients, including those chefs? If you can name the names, that'd be great, even better.
Many of the restaurants, right now I have quite a few sushi restaurants in New York City. And as you mentioned before, Hatsuhana, Nakazawa, and a new restaurant, Ika in Tribeca, and also Sushi Yoshino in Bowery Street, and also Japanese Butcher, Japan Premium Beef. They sell different kinds of my salts there. And also one of my oldest clients is Ed's Lobster Bar in Soho. And also other Sushi by Boo franchise. And where they have locations in Chicago, around Miami. So they're my clients. And also there are smaller sushi places, wonderful sushi places like Ume in Williamsburg, in Brooklyn, and Sushi by Korami in Hell's Kitchen, and many other wonderful restaurants.
Right. So obviously it sounds like salt is very important component for chefs. So what are the most popular products among the chefs and why? Meaning, how do they choose their salt? Do they have any specific preference of the chef? Or
In terms of preferences, it really, really depends on the chef. And it's just because their taste palettes are really different. Each chef has a different taste buds, and they're just taste palettes are really different. But I do notice they know, even though they don't specialize in salt, but when they taste it, they know the high quality of the salt that I'm carrying. They can taste it and they can really appreciate it, even though they don't specialize in salt, but they can taste it, which is an amazing part. And whether it's a Japanese chef, whether it's an American chef, whether it's a Chinese chef, it really doesn't matter. If it's a good salt, then they can tell.
Right. So how do they use it? And there's so many sushi chefs, right? So what's the most typical way for them to use your salt?
They use them, I believe they use them on as a finishing salt. So they put them, they spring some sea salt, for example, on a, let's say on top of a squid or octopus or tuna. And I tried it once and it's just, it's wonderful. It's really, it keeps you eat more sushi because it just makes the sushi, in my opinion, more and more flavorful and more tasty. And the salt really brings out the best of the some ingredients.
Right. Well, we tend to associate sushi with soy sauce, but a lot of items are only flavored with great salt. So yeah, that really makes sense. Okay, and is there any specific salt that's most popular among sushi chefs?
It's really depends, and of course they use both sea salt as well as flavors salt. So it's both, and it's really depends on the restaurant, depends on the chef.
Right. Yeah. One time I tried a British molten salt, which is a big crystal. And very sharp, very impactful, and I loved it. But when I tasted with Japanese sashimi, that was way too overwhelming. So, yeah, it really makes sense that, you know, things like you carry looks more subtle in flavor. Right, that's probably, you're so popular among all those chefs. Okay, so how do you find your salt? I don't think it's easy, right? Because you're really you know, focused on quality and diversity?
I'm always on the search for great souls, so I do a lot of research, but you know, there are reviews out there and saying how wonderful the salt is, but I, you know, I'm not going to make any final decision until I actually taste it with my tongue, and I make a decision whether I'm going to carry that salt or not. And you know, the descriptions of the salts are very important, but you know, you have to try it. You have to taste it first.
But have you ever been to the area of production? Like, have you been to like Iran or Mongolia or somewhere exotic?
Not yet, but I love to. I love to visit places, especially some unique places in the world to just discover more unique and unusual salts.
Right. I mean, I would imagine they're like energy spot. Because you got the first energy coming out of Cyprus salt. So, yes. Yeah, maybe like a power spot.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So who else other than chefs buy your salt?
On the internet, it's just different kinds of people. And I am assuming that they do a lot of cooking at home. And so I don't know their like a specific demographic and their backgrounds, but I'm pretty sure that they do a lot of cooking, and my customers, I'm sure they know the importance of salts.
Right. Okay. And so what type of salt do you recommend for salt beginners like myself?
For people beginning with, I recommend 100% sun-dried sea salt, especially from Japan, because that it's, first of all, I want to share with you that even though the label says it's a sun-dried sea salt, but it's not required to tell you how long the salts are put under the sun. And many of the sun-dried sea salt, they put the sea salt outside for a little bit, and they put them back in the factory or warehouse, and they dry them with a industrial dryer. So not all the sun-dried sea salt are the same. So I would recommend to try with 100% sea salt to begin with, because 100% sun-dried sea salt means that it's packed with minerals, and it has like the potent maximum minerals as much as possible. That's why you can taste all ranges of flavors, you know, like the bitterness, saltiness, sweetness, sourness in one salt.
That's interesting. So what you're saying is that if you don't fully dry it and take it back in the factory floor, they kind of mill it down, or how do they use the full minerals compared to?
So what I mean, industrial made sea salts, what happened is that they take, because of the industrial processing, many of the minerals are stripped away from the salt. So that's why you end up tasting the saltiness part of the salt. But the naturally, you know, 100% sun-dried sea salt, you taste a well-balanced, it has a well-balanced taste.
Right. And can you see it by a look? The less refined, the better, kind of?
You really have to taste it first.
Right. Okay. Well, if it's an uneven, probably it's less processed. Like I right. try
and
to that, cheat.
I mean, yeah. And the other thing is that don't ever get deceived by how the packaging. I mean, packaging is very important, but the most important thing is the inside, like the actual taste of the salt.
Right. Well, then you said, you know, Japanese sea salt, right? Like 100% dried, sun-dried outside. So do you have any specific reason that you said it's Japanese?
Yes, it's the one I carry. It's from Tosa. Right. It's a Kochi. It's for the warmer part of Japan, Kochi Prefecture, and that particular maker only does 100% sun-dried sea salt, and it takes about like 7 to 8 weeks to make it. So it's the sea salt that's really made with care and love.
Wow, amazing! Right, so Kochi is located in Shikoku Island, and it's known for beautiful nature.
Yes,
so that makes sense, right? Okay, and by the way, how many salts do you have in your cabinet?
In my cabinet? You know, I use just the leftover samples and mix them together. This is the vessel, and I, you know, I use often use for my for the toothpaste sometimes.
Hmm.
Yeah, to brush my teeth, and so it's whatever I have left, I use them at home, at my kitchen.
Right. Oh, maybe your teeth are fortified with great minerals because of the salt. Oh, wow. So, but do you have any kind of a strategy for this kind of dish? You use this one, this kind of dish, you just, you know, maybe sea salt versus rock salt, or?
I find, first of all, for the rock salt, it's, rock salt goes well with meat dishes, and but I'm not sure about the rock salt using for the seafood. But you know, once again, it's really up to the individual to whether it works or not. So you really have to experiment there. But for sea salt, I think it's good for both sea salt, seafood, and meat.
Hmm.
And also, if it's labeled as finishing salt, you don't want to use for the regular cooking. Because it's just so delicate, and it just really just loses the beauty of the salt if you use finishing salt for the for soup or something. It changes the components of the flavor.
Right. Okay. So let me just get, I have a bunch of different kinds of salt, including sea salt and rock salt. And why is rock salt more suitable for meat than fish?
You know, that's a question, and it, I think, has to do with the, like, a mineral component. And it must have to be like the chemistry of it. And I tried when I, you know, try some experiments with different kinds of salts on some certain dishes, and it just, for some reason, I don't know why, but I'm just thinking it has to be because of the amino components of it that just makes it more suitable for certain dishes.
Mm, interesting. Well, I have to experiment. Maybe yeah. For the next, over the course of 7 days, I'll just try this and that. So, yeah. Okay, and you also sell amulets made of salt. So could you tell us how your amulets can protect us?
Yes, so first of all, it's a Glam Salts exclusive amulet for you. It's very special. It comes in a pouch, and it's especially blessed by a woman. One of them is especially blessed by this Peruvian shaman. It's a woman shaman. And other one is blessed by a renowned psychic called Fiona in Woodstock in New York. And traditionally, salt has been, it's not just in Japan, but in medieval times, in just different parts of the world, salt has been used as protection against evil spirits. And in alchemy, in medieval times, salt was an important component of alchemy, creating something magical. And so, and also in Okinawa, in Japan, they traditionally carry salt as amulet for safety driving and other purposes. So the salt has been, like I said, it's not just for the Japanese only, but just throughout the cultures, salt has been, have this spiritual component to it.
Mm, right. Well, we came out of the seawater, so is whether or not it's rock salt or sea salt, I came from the same place, right? So that makes sense. We just kind of fortify our an inherent energy.
Yes. Right. And, oh, sorry. So also, as you're saying, the salt comes from the earth. So it's an element from the earth. And, you know, to live for survival, we need water, air, and salt. And these are the three components we need to live, especially for survival. So salt is both spiritually and also for nutritionally, we need the salt. We can't live without any salt.
Right. So do you carry it like in your purse, or how do you use your amulet?
I have salts everywhere in my office. salt chunks are just everywhere. So I'm really protected by all the, I do feel I'm protected by the goddess of the salt. So because they're everywhere at my place. But I do have a salt amulet in my bag for protection.
Right. Okay. And just in case you need salt at the restaurant, you can just get a piece of it. Or no, I'm just kidding. But
yeah.
Right. Okay. And then, so where can we buy your products? You're based in Hudson Valley, right? But also you have a shop in Tokyo, Yokohama?
No, we don't have a shop, but we do have an online shop. So if you go to our website, glamsalt.com, there are various salts that you can purchase. And also, I also sell unusual rock chunks from Mongolia, and also white, not the pink Himalayan. I also sell pink, but I also sell the white crystal Himalayan rock salt chunks as well. So if you go to our website, you can purchase. And yes, and also for the retail, Japan Premium Beef on Great Jones Street in New York, they carry, at their store, they carry some of my salts for their meat.
Right. So, yeah, Japan Premium Beef is an amazing place to find Wagyu. And
yes.
Wagyu themselves, they look like a gem. So it's like a edible jewelry shop, your salt and their
yes.
beef.
Yes, right. it's a perfect, it's the match in heaven. It's the perfect combination. And also on the website, Edible Magazine's, the Doorstep Market also have some of my salts there.
Right. So do you rotate your products, so you keep finding new products all the time?
I'm always on the search for new salts, but over the 10 years, I realized that it's not always the quantity of the salts you carry. It's also more about the quality of the salts. So I'm always on the search for some unique, unusual salts, but I'm not so much in a rush to find more, because to me, like, the qualities are more important than the quality. So, I'm always open for new salts.
Right. And also, well, this is, you know, everybody's talking about microplastic, but do you have to be careful about, you know, the salt's quality in terms of that contamination by microplastic?
Many of the salts I carry, like the sea salt from Japan, I mean, that comes from, to me, in my opinion, the good sea salt comes from a good, clean water. So I'm told by the maker in Japan that their seawater is so pure that they can even drink it. So to me, the definition of good sea salt is that comes from the clean water. And however, if the even though it's a sea salt, but if it comes from relatively polluted seawater from the ocean, I don't think it would taste good. And I think to me, it would just taste saltier than others.
Right. So tasting is everything. You can
yes.
tell the quality. Right. Okay. So what are your plans and dreams?
I hope to just continue to expand my business, and I hope that I hope to introduce the wonders and beauty of salts to as many people as possible.
Right. It's very consistent with your therapy work too. So
yes, in a way, I was thinking they're similar and they're connected, because it's all about bringing you know, sense of wonders and happiness and surprises in your life. And that's I think it's very similar to the idea about therapy as well. And so it's about happiness.
Yeah, that was not the coincidence that you had that Cypress lemon sea salt.
Yes.
Change your life, right? Yes. Basically, right? Okay, great. So good luck. And where can we find you online and on social media?
Yeah, so it's all under Glam Salt. So for the Instagram, it's the same thing, Glam Salt. For my website, it's glamsalt.com. And you're welcome to contact me if you have any questions or things like that. I'm always available to reply to your questions and requests.
Awesome. Okay, great. And well, keep me posted. We can chat more about more different kinds of salt in the future.
Yes, of course.
Right. Okay, so thank you so much for joining us today, Makiko.
And thank you very, very much for inviting me to your show today.
Yeah, you're welcome. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Japan Needs is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Engineer today is Amin Spenjan, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japan Needs is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.